You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Hour two of Miller and Moulton on this hump day as we get over it together. Hope your week has gone well thus far. And hopefully we can add a little something to it as well. Miller and Moulton, MillerandMoulton.com, Miller_Moulton on X. We talked about a poll question all day yesterday. Did we actually post one?
No.
Part of our charm. We're that child that the parent just shakes their head about walking around the corner of the room, right?
Well, I think we procrastinate. And I'm guilty of that all the time in life. My wife gets upset with me, gets upset with my daughter for doing it, but we come up with the idea for a question and never get to the question. We talk about the question, never get to the question.
Well, sometimes there's also multiple ideas. It's hard to make up your mind.
You know what the problem is? None of our ideas, Trent, are ever any good.
I disagree. I think the problem is we don't do it at the right time. When the show starts, we get into the show. During the breaks, David does one of two things. David completely engages the Twitch chat for the entire break, or David goes for a lap and gets something to eat. Those are the only two things that happen during the break.
And
if I literally try to say, hey, what do you want to do next segment? He'll get up and leave the room.
Right. I'll tell you what we're going to do next segment. I'm going to get a bowl of cereal.
And I'll tell you what we're going to do the next segment right when we start the next segment.
Right. Besides, I'm watching videos on X. Leave me alone.
Right.
So anyway, here's a thought. Do you think enough people are familiar with Trevor Bauer and his story to actually have him in a poll question? See, that's the other thing. Other shows are really good at coming up with poll questions. We're not. And yet, in theory,
yeah, Trent,
they'd be sponsorable. They get people engaged, promote the show. So, but I have to admit, this Trevor Bauer story interests me. And it interests you, and it interests us. All right? He was accused. He was never even charged. Twice. They did two complete investigations. Two different bodies of law enforcement. Neither one charged him. Yet he was suspended by the Dodgers. He was paid. I mean, you know, don't feel totally sorry for him. He got his $100 million. He did. But he hasn't pitched in the majors since 2022. And no one's willing to even sign him. He was a number one starter. At worst, he was a number two. How many of those are there in baseball? Do you know how many teams could use a Trevor Bauer?
Put it this way. There are less number one starters than there are first round grades, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Like we go to the draft, 32 teams pick, but there's usually somewhere between 21 and 26 first round grades. I don't know if there are that many number one starters.
And now, because of all the noise and how he's been discredited as a human being, because he was accused of violence against a woman, he claimed it was rough sex. He said, I got the pictures and the texts to prove it. I've got the money that she tried to get from me if I wouldn't play ball and get her to shut up. Okay. And, you know, it went public. The Dodgers suspended him and effectively ended his career, although he got most of the money that he was owed and he signed a $105 million contract. But you could sign Trevor Bauer right now for the league minimum. You could.
He said it. This isn't Moulton just saying, well, you could sign him for the league. No. Trevor Bauer said he would play for the league minimum.
Now, he's a veteran of certain years, so I think the league minimum's like $1.5 million. It's not the rookie salary scale, which I think is like $800,000. But still, I mean, you're getting, in theory, even if he's not the same pitcher that he was, you're getting a solid starting pitcher for $1.5 million.
At worst, you're getting a number three starter.
Right. So, now that this woman, whose identity was kept private, which I think most of us are in favor of. Okay, I mean, it's tough. And what's awful is that only 3% of the women who allege domestic violence turn out to be false claims. So, and it takes a lot to convict a guy of domestic violence. It does. Okay. In fact, usually 9 out of 10 claims of domestic violence don't end up in a conviction. So, I mean, this woman has done a real disservice to a lot of women, because people remember this and they won't remember a lot of other things. But getting back to Trevor Bauer, if you're a major league team, now that she has been charged with doing to someone else what Trevor Bauer claimed she did to him, would you sign him? Remember, he's never been charged with a crime. And now her claims have the least amount of credibility that they've had in 2+ years. If not discredited completely, would you sign him?
And I asked it a little differently, so you're probably going to be upset with me. But I simply asked, do you think Trevor Bauer will ever play in the majors again?
And he's pitched in Asia. He is pitching in the Mexican League. He's had a couple of, a couple exhibition appearances, which were good. As people are pointing out in our Twitch chat room, he actually had his first start in the regular season in the Mexican League yesterday and got roughed up. Less than 4 innings, 4 runs, and what have you. But would you sign him? I mean, there's no doubt you're going to have to send him to the minors. He's going to have to basically put in a spring training. You got to probably give him 4 weeks of work. But would you sign Trevor Bauer? Now, are we going to ask, would you sign, or do you think anyone will sign?
I asked, do you think he will ever play in major leagues again?
I actually think now he's going to get signed. Not this week, not next week. I actually think now, Mark, someone in June is going to sign him. I do. I actually think they're going to let him pitch regularly in the Mexican League, and so that this way the transition won't be as long. That when they sign him, they'll be able to pitch him pretty soon.
Yeah, and I think the fact that he was a guy that wasn't well-liked in clubhouses from all accounts, even though I know he did the show on Major League Baseball radio, I get it. I think he's done. I think Major League Baseball has put the kibosh on any chance of him getting signed. I think there is a wink-wink, nudge-nudge deal going on. I think it's borderline collusion, and that he'll never play in the league again.
So that's our poll question. About Trevor Bauer, do you think he ever pitches in the majors again? That Mark Miller, I'll retweet it soon at the David Moulton, and you can find it, that whole Miller_Moulton thing on X. So there you go. But we're fired up. We've got the Lightning and the Panthers in the first round of the playoffs. Yeah! Man, I'm jacked for this. All the storylines. All of them. And also, this could be the end. I mean, the Lightning may be playing. This could be their Golden State Warrior series. I mean, the runs started at the same time. The Lightning lost in the finals in 2015. The Warriors won their first title in 2015. The Lightning have won how many cups, Mark? 2? They've been to 4? They lost in 15 and they lost in 22 to the Avs. And they won the 2 back-to-back in 20 and 21. And they went to 2 other conference finals that they lost in. I mean, the Lightning have made deep playoff runs virtually every year for the last 9 seasons. I think 6 conference finals, 4 Stanley Cup finals, twice they hoisted the sucker. Well, the Warriors have gone to 6 finals and won it 4 times in the last 10 seasons. They were eliminated in the play-in last night. Because, Stamkos' contract is up as soon as the playoffs are over. Now, we all hope he stays in Tampa Bay. It would be disgraceful if the Lightning let him get away. Best player in franchise history. You've got to be kidding me. And your captain. But, I mean, this could be the end for Stamkos and the Lightning. And is this their last run?
I don't think so, because in basketball, you watch Clay be a different player than he was during the run. Draymond's not close to where he was during the run. Vasilevsky's still damn near as good as he was 10 years ago. And if you have a Vasilevsky, David, we've pointed this out before, yeah, you give yourself a pretty good shot to win.
It's like having a Joe Burrow. I mean, when you have a Vasilevsky, it's like having a Joe Burrow.
And Braden Point, what he's become, and right. Kucherov, what he's become during this, they've been able to maintain a level that to me is impossible to maintain in the NBA. So I don't think they're done.
Okay. All right.
The only problem is the East has gotten really good with them.
And then here's the Panthers. This is the best team they've ever had. It is. It's the best team they've ever had. They've won the President's Trophy before. They've gone to two Stanley Cup Finals before. This is the best team they've ever had. And they have to go through a team they've never beaten in the playoffs. The in-state team who's made hockey stick, who's legitimate. And then you got the Panthers. The Lightning are everything the Panthers are trying to be. And Tampa Bay, going all the way back to their existence, Phil Esposito, who helped bring the Lightning into existence, has a major beef with the Panthers. Up on the scoreboard, he would always put Miami.
He wanted the Lightning to be Florida for their namesake, and the league didn't allow it. The league said Tampa Bay is going to be your name. And when they allowed the Florida Panthers to be the Florida Panthers, it honked Espo off.
And so he always calls them Miami. That's what I'm talking about. That's a 30-year grudge.
For a team that has zero history, and he holds a grudge against them. He doesn't like them.
So let's do this, shall we? Lightning and Panthers. I hope it goes seven. Let's do it for two full weeks. It begins this weekend. Ian Cummings, Pro Football Network, will preview the draft in 25 minutes.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
21 minutes after the hour, Ian Cummings, Pro Football Network, will look ahead to the draft, which is 8 days away in a little more than 15 minutes time. Am I going to show my age here? The answer is probably yes.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
But I have to admit, Trent is doing something right now, which, well, he's not doing something. It's what he's wearing. And it bothers me. See? Now, maybe it's just because he woke up late and he was scrambling just to get here for the beginning of the show. And maybe he grabbed the first thing that, you know, he literally could get his hands on.
No, I don't think so. Because it kind of matches. I mean, the undershirt matches the jersey.
I know. It does look, he's very Georgetown Hoya-ish from 40 years ago.
Yes. Yeah.
What jersey is that you're wearing?
Ray Allen, Miami Heat.
Right. See, that bothers me. And it bothers me because Ray Allen, and granted, he had a really big shot. He did. Had a big moment. A big shot. What did he play, 2 years?
Yeah, two.
Right. Okay. And even though he had a really big shot, on that team, was he the best player?
No, he was like the sixth best player.
Second best player?
No.
Third?
No.
Fourth?
Maybe.
Probably, maybe, depending on the day.
I wouldn't even say fourth. I'd say like fifth or sixth best player. See, okay. David, you can't get mad at me because I'll admit that.
What do, I want to know what you're mad at him about.
What are you doing buying a Ray Allen Heat jersey? Come on. Not a Ray Allen Milwaukee Bucks jersey. Not a Ray Allen Boston Celtics jersey.
All hate mail can be directed to my younger brother. This is his. This is not mine.
So you stole this is a stolen jersey.
When I was home, I here's the thing. I flew home with a backpack full of clothes and my dop kit, whatever I got to bring. When I came back, I brought a second backpack full of stuff from home. And most of it consisted of jerseys.
Of course.
My closet and right. My brother's closet.
Because he's trying to dress up for all the women that he's trying to meet. He's like, you know what I need? I need jerseys. When I go out during the spring and summer, okay, I need jerseys.
And look, the Heat play today. It's a big day. It's a big game for the Heat tonight.
I was stunned when Felipe, our previous producer, told me he had a girlfriend. I was stunned. I was floored. There was no way that a kid that wears basketball jerseys every day thinks mm-hmm. he could play in the NBA, is 5'9", and...
Right.
And conducts himself the way that he does, could actually get himself a girl. And a really nice one.
And they're still together.
Right. She's a super young lady. I
know.
I think she's wonderful.
It just goes to show how bad the male talent pool really is.
They
are just so desperate. They really are. I mean, they're just, you know, they're aiming for an 8 and they're settling for a 5.5. I mean, they really are.
So maybe we are old, not a touch. Maybe it is, you know, maybe Trent's going to go out today in that Heat jersey and meet the love of his life.
And but, I hope the best looking woman that he has ever seen walks up to him and said, you know, you're kind of cute, but you're wearing a Ray Allen Heat jersey. I mean, I would have like wanted to meet you, but it's Ray Allen.
But I'm going to take a stab at something here.
All right.
Based on the little I know about you. I know you pretty well, but we've only known each other a short time.
Right.
But you've given us a couple of clues that you buy a lot of your jerseys on the cheap.
Yes.
And what I think this was simply a value purchase for a Heat jersey that he probably bought for less than $10 on a website long after Ray Allen was done with the Heat. Am I close?
Well, the second part of that's very true. It was a couple years ago. My brother, again, this is my brother's. My brother bought this.
Don't blame it on him. You stole it and you're wearing it.
I did. Because, David, I'm like, oh, I got a job in Florida. Oh, I'm going home. Oh, there's a Heat jersey in the closet. I'm taking that. I don't care if it's Alonzo Mourning, Gary Payton, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James. I'm taking it. It's Ray Allen. And here's the thing. A lot of people that own Heat Ray Allen jerseys, which there's not many out there.
I was going to say there's 14 of them.
But a lot of people that own them do it to troll LeBron because, you know, James catches, puts up a three, won't go, rebound Bosh, back out to Allen, his three-pointer, bang! And then we go to game 7. And Ray Allen has 0 points in game 7 for what it's worth. But
look at Mike Breen Jr. over there. All right.
But yes, like Mark, it. To answer your question, roundabout way, long answer, you're very close. Yes. It was bought on the cheap a couple of years ago.
There you go. See, and I am slowly, David, I have been beaten down by between Felipe and Trent and our Twitch chat room and the population in general that our long-standing rule of wearing a jersey past the age of 25 – we're on an island, David, and you and I are on it alone.
We thought we were on the mainland when we instituted that rule, and we have been just thrown on an island, and it is damn near deserted.
We're hoping for a volleyball with a face painted on it, David. That's that's where we're at right now.
I'm just hoping for a message in a bottle. All right. Hey, you haven't done one of these in like 3 weeks. You still remember how? What it's all about?
We'll give it a shot. The Rays walked it off last night, but it was a chopper to third. And if I'm going to be honest, it was kind of a lazy call. So I'll see your Rays walk off, and I will raise you a Kevin Harlan call from the NBA play-in tournament, baby.
Oh, geez.
Pelicans a home favorite against the Lakers. Why, I don't know. But LeBron led the charge for L.A. Zion dropped 40, but sometimes the old man needs to teach a little bit.
LeBron is 4-10 with 17. 2 to fire.
Oh, look at
spinning,
this.
Spinning, scooping, scoring. What a dance right there by James.
That's old school.
That's old school, says Reggie Miller. LeBron makes Zion dance a little bit. Lakers beat the Pelicans by 4. 110 to 106 is the final. And we have a Western Conference Finals rematch. Denver Nuggets, Los Angeles Lakers. Game 1's on Saturday. There's your Molly Maid play of the day.
Call Molly Maid today. If you're looking for someone to clean your home or you're not satisfied with who's currently doing it, give Molly Maid a shot. 239-774-5839. That's 239-774-5839. Please tell them Miller and Moulton sent you.
The old man played 41 minutes, 23 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists.
Just a night at the office.
He's played, what, 70-plus games this year? Right, he's leading the team in minutes. He's the oldest player in the league.
By a lot. Who's next, Chris Paul?
Yeah, but what's that, 3-4 years?
A couple, at least, yeah.
I will say, by the way, I mean, he has been asked a couple times recently how much longer is he playing, and he has said not long. I mean...
Well, and given the whole way things have worked out with Bronny, too. I mean, Bronny declares for the NBA draft.
He's also entered the portal. I mean, the likelihood is he's going to stay in college.
Right, but LeBron's timing with that, too, was like, I don't know how much longer I'm going to be around. Next day, Bronny declares. Who knows? Someone's going to draft Bronny in the second round, and with that, they're going to get the rights to LeBron James. Am I wrong?
No.
No, probably not.
I know you hate it, but am I wrong?
No, we've been saying this for the longest time. We've been right there with you, Trent, that this is how this is going to all go down.
Kid has no business declaring for the draft. I mean, how about start in college? How about if you start there? How about if you can actually start? Like, I'm not kidding. Like, LeBron's buddy is the new coach at Duquesne. Go to Duquesne and play, start every game for him. Play 32 minutes a night. Do that for a year. Anyway, Ian Cummings, the draft, you know, the NFL, it's kind of popular. We'll talk to him about it next.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
22 minutes before the hour. Seth Everett at the top of the hour. Mark Lye, 1 hour from now. Thanks for being with us. Hump Day Edition, Miller and Moulton. MillerandMoulton.com, Miller_Moulton on X. Our poll question, in light of Trevor Bauer's accuser being charged with making false accusations, do you think Trevor Bauer now will play in the major leagues ever again? Yes or no?
70% say no right now, by the way. 70-plus percent say no, and the vote's pretty high for a poll question at this time of the day.
So, listen, yesterday, if we had asked that question at this time, it would have been 99%. So, you know, I think Trevor Bauer is making some headway. That Mark Miller, the David Moulton, Miller_Moulton on X is where you go to vote. Ian Cummings is kind enough to join us. He analyzes the draft for Pro Football Network and ProFootballNetwork.com. Follow Ian on X at IC_draft. IC, that's the letter I, the letter C for Ian Cummings, IC_draft. Ian, David, and Mark, good morning. How are you?
Hey, David and Mark, good to talk to you guys again. I'm good. We're a little over a week out from the 2024 NFL draft. We've had a ton of anticipation building up this offseason. We are finally right on the doorstep. I'm excited to see what happens. So many different possibilities. We'll get to find out what truly happens next week.
What, if anything, has changed on your board? You've been working on this for a while. You finally have your final board, I believe, up. So what if anything has changed in your world in the last week to 10 days?
In the last week to 10 days, not a ton. It's been mostly solidified since then. I would say I've properly valued the top offensive linemen in the class. I've got, I think, 5 guys in my top 20, around 10 in my top 32. So it's a really strong class at the very top of the offensive line. And a couple guys like Troy Fatanu from Washington, he was a top 20 guy for me, but now he's my 13th overall player. Tali Esekuaga is my 11th overall player. So I've been steadily moving those guys up and getting the proper valuation on them. But the moral of the story, this class is particularly strong at a few positions, like wide receiver, offensive tackle, and then I'd say the defensive back group is a lot deeper than people think, and that's also something that I've figured out over the past few days. But most of the noteworthy, the more noteworthy positions, like quarterback, right, that's been solidified. It's been solidified for a long time for me.
You're all in on Drake May, correct? Didn't you rate him number one?
Yep, he and Caleb Williams are my top two players.
All right, sell us on Drake May. You know, if you believe that the noise that is out there, that maybe May could fall even to three, but, you know, just pound the table a little bit for Drake May.
For sure. And, you know, it's one of those things, I like to remain outcome independent as an analyst. We don't know what's going to happen with these guys. And if you're a little, you know, if you get skittish when guys have mechanical issues like May does, I don't think it's a liability by any stretch, but his inconsistent footwork and base width can lead to situational imprecision at times. I think that would be the biggest thing. Some lapses in decision-making under pressure in the heat-of-the-moment situations, right? He's a young QB, and I think a lot of the flaws that he has are young QB flaws. But you're hoping that with more experience, he can iron those out. Because what makes me so excited about his potential, right, is I see a really complete palette of physical talent and operational utility underneath the surface. I think, you know, the talent is right on the surface. You got the athleticism, the size, right? You know, he doesn't utilize his running ability as much as, say, Jaden Daniels, but he can get out in space. He can hurdle guys. He's got really good straight line speed. He's got agility in the pocket. And his arm talent, to me, is really slept on in this class. People talk about his arm like it's a cannon, right? He's got the strength for sure, but his angle freedom, his arm elasticity, his ability to manipulate his launch release points off platform, right, from any platform, rolling to his left, to his right, you know, on the move. He's so good at staying balanced and making those off-platform throws. Caleb Williams gets all the notoriety for that. He's very good, too. But I think Drake May is also in that tier, that top-tier off-platform creative thrower. And then his anticipation, his window anticipation, his ability to manipulate defenders and open up windows down the field, throw over the middle, right? You know, I think the mechanical accuracy things definitely needs to iron those out a little bit more. But he has shown he can control precision to a very precise point, throwing where only his receiver can get it. But then also throwing them away from contact over the middle. So those flashes are there. It's not that he can't do it, but in the right situation with the right incubation, I think the ceiling is sky high. I think it's the highest ceiling in the NFL draft. And then you look at what he brings on the operational side with the processing ability, the leverage IQ, and the pocket management. It's an investment. It's a risk that I'm very much worth taking.
Very quickly, is a Josh Allen comparison accurate? Because if we go back and remember, the knock on Allen, besides the fact he played at Wyoming, was that he completed like 55% of his passes. And usually guys who are not accurate on Saturdays don't become accurate on Sundays. He was one of the first to do it and do it in a big way.
Yeah, I think from a physical talent perspective, the running ability and the arm strength, I don't think it's quite as strong as Allen, but Allen was, he's one of one, right? You know, he's the peak of arm strength. So I think from a talent perspective, there is that. I think May is more accurate. I think his accuracy issues are not nearly as bad as Allen's were coming out. I comp him more to Jordan Love. You know, what we saw from Love in 2023 with the Packers, a streamlined, taller guy. He's got really good mobility in the pocket, outside the pocket, but also the off-platform freedom to create and make throws from any type of position, right? So, and I think he doesn't need 2 or 3 years to sit. I think Drake May is Jordan Love with a probably faster developmental runway for me. So that's kind of the comp that I would lean, but the talent is there. Accuracy could be improved on, but you're working in the right direction.
Is Caleb Williams NFL ready? And you know, I ask that because he's going to get thrown in, and a lot of people are worried. The Bears' record with QBs is awful, and here comes yet another highly touted quarterback that may play week one.
I think he is NFL ready. I do. I think there are a few things that I wanted to see him improve a little more on in 2023. The biggest thing, right, his play style, the magician ability off script, right, to create, you know, with defenders closing in multiple directions, the change of direction, the, again, the off-platform, arm elasticity, two things that are very strong and prevalent with both Williams and May. But I think with Williams, you see that creation ability off script. There are times occasionally where he will bring on unnecessary chaos to himself by missing receivers over the short range, right, kind of hesitating on initial reads. So I want him to be a little more efficient at picking out those easy throws. Take the easy throw, don't play hero ball all the time. But at the same time, looking at his situation at USC, a lot of pressure was given up the middle and by the tackles, right? So he was dealing with that very often. And then on the defensive side, you're having to score 40 points a game just to keep your team in it. So the situation was conducive to Williams feeling like he had all that pressure on his shoulders. So I think a supporting cast like the one that the Bears are building will actually do wonders for him and his comfort early on. And I do think, you know, past the creation ability and the high upside tools, I think when you see him operate on RPO looks and rhythm throws, he's got very clean mechanics, very good accuracy over the middle of the field, you know, on slants and digs. I do think he has more than enough in his immediate palate to start at a decently high level. And then again, the ceiling is just near unmatched. So to answer your question, the upside is there, but I do think he's ready to start right away.
I know you just rate prospects, but do you take any organizational bias into effect? Like, for example, you pointed out Clemson does an amazing job with defensive tackles. Like, those that have been drafted in the last 10 years out of Clemson, they're really good in the NFL, even better than where they were drafted. By the same token, Ian, offensive tackles from Alabama have woefully underperformed compared to where they were drafted. So should I hold that against J.C. Latham?
I would say it's something to be aware of, right? It's one of those things where, yeah, if the school has a track record, you're going to notice it for sure. But one of the big no-nos of scouting is helmet scouting, right? You know, you never want to judge a guy just by the helmet. Obviously, you're going to take note of it. But if you helmet scout, right, it's a pretty cliche example, but C.J. Stroud last year. Like, if you looked at Ohio State's track record at quarterback and it was like, oh, Terrell Pryor, Dwayne Haskins, like, you know, I wouldn't want a Cardale Jones, right? Like, it's not a very strong track record, so that would maybe turn you off to C.J. Stroud. And we saw a lot of people kind of use that helmet scouting argument to say, what if he's not the guy, right? Obviously, there is an outcome where maybe he didn't work out, but as a prospect, C.J. Stroud was different. So I think you have to look at it on a case-by-case basis for each prospect. You take it into account, you be aware of it, you acknowledge it, but that's as far as you go. I don't think you should let it impact your process.
I know the tackles are good. I know the center from Oregon's really good. The rest of the interior linemen, how deep is the draft regarding that? Because I look at the Dolphins maybe looking at a guard, and I don't know what they'll be able to do in round two.
I think there's talent for sure. I think there are a few guys that have tackle guard flex where they might transition inside to the next level. But I think the pure guard class, Graham Barton is my top IOL. I don't know if the Dolphins don't get him in round one, they're not getting him. So that's tricky, but he's a good player. I think Christian Haynes from UConn is a very good player as well. He's around 6'3", 318, right? 34-inch arms, really physical, explosive, tenacious. He's a mauler. Big fan of his game. Cooper Beebe is also a round two option potentially. He's a little bit shorter arms, but I see some Kevin Zietler with him where I think he can just be a really good starter for a long time. Christian Mahogany, kind of in that similar mold from Boston College. Explosive, physical, tenacious. Again, a little stiff in the hips, not great lateral mobility, but you're still getting a solid starter. And then you go down the board, I think Kieran Amagaji from Yale is one of those tackles who transitions well to guard. Dominic Cooney from Kansas is another one. Brandon Coleman from TCU. Mason McCormick from South Dakota State. I do think there are options for sure. For the Dolphins, it's just about finding the right one for them, who has that schematic versatility in the run game where they can operate reach blocks, you know, across gaps, or they can pull across the formation and block in space too. I think finding that versatility and that schematic flexibility is key. But to answer your question, I think there's a lot of options. I think it peters off a little bit in the day three range. So ideally you get them on day two, but within that day two window, there is a lot to take from.
Problem for the Dolphins, they don't have a third and they don't have a fourth round pick. So do they use that second round pick to pick somebody, or do they trade out to try to get some additional picks? He's Ian Cummings, Pro Football Network, profootballnetwork.com. His big board is out. Top 300. He posted it Monday. IC_draft. Letter I, letter C, _draft is how you follow him on X. By the way, is there a running back worth a darn in this draft? Like, will there be one taken in the top 50? Or are we going to go almost around three before we get a running back?
It's a good question, and I don't have a definitive answer this year. Last year, we had Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs. We knew that those guys were special, right? This year, it's a little more uncertain. My top three running backs, I have a Trey Benson from Florida State as my RB1, Jonathan Brooks from Texas as my RB2, and then Will Shipley from Clemson. I know he's not quite as good in congestion, but I really like his explosiveness, his speed, his hip flexibility, his vision, and then his receiving ability, too. I think in the modern NFL, that'll play really well. Those are my top three guys. Blake Corum is after that, Bucky Irving, Dylan Lobby, Isaiah Davis. But I think this year's class, none of those guys are in my top 50. So Trey Benson is my first one at 51. I think it depends on, you know, how teams feel, right? Because we've seen situations where, going back to, I think, last year, the Seahawks picked Zach Charbonnet in round two, right? And no one expected that. And because they had Kenneth Walker, they didn't need to pick a guy that high. But if you're a team that feels comfortable taking that luxury early on, sometimes teams surprise us. So I look at Trey Benson, Jonathan Brooks. My gut tells me those are the first two off the board. What order they go, I'm not sure, but they both fit that volume back profile. They both have that slashing ability, that speed on the vertical plane, and then some receiving upside as well. So I'm thinking in that 40 to 60 range is probably where we'll see it, because that's when teams start to get comfortable taking that luxury pick. But I think that's the earliest we see a running back get off the board.
I have nearly the same question with tight end. We know Brock Bowers is going to go early, but after that, the tight end class pretty thin, isn't it?
It's a little thin, for sure. I think there are a few guys that are better than the consensus evaluations let on. Ben Sinnott, for example, from Kansas State, he's in my top 50. I think his pure upside, his ultimate ceiling, he's got some Dallas Clark through him. I think his size, his fluidity on change of directions, his bend as a route runner, his all-around versatility. He's got an incredibly vast route tree. You can use him as an H-back, inline, big slot, even out wide. So he's really versatile, a very solid player. I think he could be one of those guys kind of in a similar usage palette to Sam Laporta, where you can use him wherever, and he can be a really good starter right out of the gate. Jared Wiley from TCU is another one. Another move tight end who's an incredibly flexible mover for his size. He's got that vertical speed to threaten the seam as well. Really good hands. He really improved his red zone efficiency this past year. And then even guys like Jatavion Sanders, probably a big slot at the next level. He's a fringe top 100 guy for me. Theo Johnson from Penn State, another seam rack guy. Not great in the red zone because he doesn't have good hands, but he's an inline blocker as well. And then Eric All from Iowa. You know, medical has kind of caused him to fall under the radar, but he's a very complete tight end as well. So I think it does fall off after Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers is just different as a prospect, but Ben Sinnott, Jared Wiley, I think there are a few guys in the day two range who, if you can get them at the right spot and put them in the right offensive scheme environment, they can be really good players for you and exceed their draft capital.
Okay, 30 seconds, and really it's all we have. Brock Bowers, are we talking like explosive elite tight end, or are we thinking he's just going to be a very good tight end?
I think in the right scheme, if you can understand that he's a weapon, not just a tight end, and get him the ball any way possible, he can be that guy. He can be that explosive weapon who elevates your offense. Athletically, there's some Vernon Davis there, just with the speed and the seam-breaking ability. You know, I do think you need to have a plan with how you execute with him, but the upside is nearly unmatched.
Ian Cummings, Pro Football Network, profootballnetwork.com. They have done a great job prepping you for the draft. Ton of mock drafts. Ian's big board is out. Follow Ian on X at the letter I, the letter C, underscore draft. IC underscore draft. Ian, we know you'll be busy next week. Hopefully we can talk to you or somebody with PFN, but safe travels. All the best.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Ian Cummings joining us once again here on Miller and Moulton.
I don't know if it's that I married a Pittsburgh girl, but when I see IC draft, I'm just thinking of an Iron City.
You're also thinking about we're gonna drink when we do our draft live on Twitch a week from tomorrow.
There's no doubt. I've thought, you know, Trent, I might invite him to the house, but I'm gonna have to get him an Uber for the ride home, because there's no way anybody's driving home after this draft. Miller and Moulton.